Life has changed almost overnight.
Yeah, you have a lot of questions. We are going to try to get you some answers. I'm Mike Simpson.
And I'm Charles Feldman. Together, we host Coronavirus Daily, a podcast designed to help us all get through this crisis together.
We go around the world and talk to some of the top experts out there. So think of this as a guide for you and your family. Multiple ways to listen: radio.com, the radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Remember, that's Coronavirus Daily.
Did you know there are over 1,000 podcasts on radio.com? Download the app or head to radio.com to listen to all your favorite national and local podcasts, including your favorite morning shows and radio shows on demand. At the top of the app homepage, click the podcast icon to discover new shows, subscribe, and manage your podcast subscriptions. Go to your app store or radio.com/download for all your podcast listening. Radio.com.
Thanks for streaming The Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon.
Vincent Goodwill.
One thing I'll say about Michael Reinsdorf is this, and I firmly believe this. He has a famous last name, but is a pretty anonymous person throughout all of this. But he's very sensitive to the success of the franchise. I truly believe he wants to win. And I think he has a chance here to make a name for himself, to step outside of Jerry Reinsdorf's shadow while Jerry is still here and making the final decisions. That's a very tricky process. And I don't think that we can all appreciate the fine line that he has to walk, that he's trying to walk here. And making a decision like this means you have to have a bunch of people on board and behind you. And whether it works or not, I think just the fact that he's willing to go through a top-down overhauling of basketball operations says a lot about his desire to want to get this thing right.
Dan Bernstein, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station.
Thanks for streaming The Score.
McNeil and Parkins, afternoons 2 to 6 on The Score.
We're talking to Mark Grace here. Can I ask, like, what is your side of the story? Because I was actually at the game in 01 when you were with the Diamondbacks and you came back and you played at Wrigley and there was a huge standing ovation for you. There was never really an issue with Mark Grace and Cubs fans, so I...
I don't understand
what happened between you and the organization.
Let's just put it this way. When we're younger, we all think we're probably better than we actually are or something like that. I just know this, that after 13 years of playing with the Chicago Cubs, I wanted to be a Cub for life. I wanted to be a Cub for life, and unfortunately for me, I'm not the one making that decision.
Listen to McNeil and Parkins on your ride home 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, this is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. Sports Radio 670 The Score, our radio.com sports station, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is being brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto. Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
Russ, when you were talking about this, what were the things that you remember that stood out to you in regards to light-skinned Dominicans versus dark-skinned Dominicans?
We've been able to adopt that here in the States, where it's like, nah, black is beautiful. For them, as a Dominican, it has never been beautiful. And a lot of that comes from this deeply rooted history of self-hatred towards your blackness. So that's why for me, and I'll tie it into baseball a little bit, that's why Roberto Clemente was so amazing, because he said, no, I'm Puerto Rican, but I'm also black. And I accept both of those sides as being me. That's who I am. And so when we talk about Sammy Sosa now, it's how does Sammy go from this handsome, charismatic, dark-skinned Dominican dude to the Sammy Sosa we saw last night? And it's just like, you have to consider what deeply rooted things and issues have been a big part of Dominican culture that Sammy grew up with in San Pedro de Macorís, And that dude was on top of the world. That was the king of the Dominican. And even he had to succumb to that pressure of, is dark beautiful? And as we've seen over the last 15, 20 years, the answer to that was no to him.
Make me a bicycle clown!
I really, really appreciated Russ Dorsey being on the show yesterday and lending his experience and research and knowledge of being immersed in the Dominican Republic and being someone who also loves and covers baseball, for him to talk about some of those things and why, to me and him at least, and I think other people who ended up understanding the conversation, why the Sammy Sosa skin jokes aren't funny. And they aren't funny because there's a lot that goes into why someone would like to change their skin. And it makes me feel very badly that someone felt the need to change their skin to be more accepted or more liked or whatever the reason is. Like, I have empathy for that. So it's not funny to me whenever we see the clips. I think that there's something there, and whether it's happening in the Caribbean or other Latin American countries, whether it's happening in Asia, because it's happening all over there too, and in some cases here in America, like, we still haven't had the best time discussing issues of race inside of the prism of black and white, the spectrum that goes on with black folks in general. We haven't really talked about. So I really thank Russ for being on the show. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock today. Jason Leisure is going to be on the show at 1. Going to talk with him about Mitch, because we didn't spend any time talking about Mitchell Trubisky and his press conference. I also think the NFL has got a big problem on their hands, and that's them dealing with COVID. And we're seeing places like Arizona and Texas and Florida. I mean, we could see in the next couple days those states go back to some restrictions. And I don't know if the NFL is ready. The good news is that the NFL is in their dark period right now before training camp starts. The bad news, training camp is 5 weeks away. So we'll see where things stand. Other things that we're going to do on the show today, and I know that there were people who listened to a couple of the chunks that Dan had played on from Kenny Williams and him talking. I'm going to play two chunks of it too. I will say that I'm glad that Dan admitted to some of the dismissive language that he would have on the air whenever it came up, where there was someone who was black who was telling you that they were a victim of racist emails or letters or whatever. I'm glad that he has opened his eyes to the role that he has played in allowing some of that to fester among fan bases. But Herbie and I were talking this morning about how we wanted to present this with Kenny, and it's a lot. Yesterday, the White Sox hit me up, and they said, look, Kenny's going to do this thing. We know that you're going to be on the air when it comes on, but you should check it out. So it didn't get uploaded until I was off the air, and I had a chance to watch it a couple of times right now. I want to play it more long form, so we cut it into two chunks. I figure if we can give 26 minutes to Theo Epstein, we can give 26 minutes to Kenny Williams talking about some of this stuff as well. So it's 34 minutes long, so we're not going to play all 34 minutes. And I'll just give you a summary of the first few minutes that I do think that are important for context. And this is one of the things that I talk about all the time when it comes to Kenny Williams. This is someone whose godfather raised the fist at the 68 Olympics. This is someone who grew up with the Black Panther movement in the Bay Area. This is someone who was given a gun at 9 years old because of the fear of what would be done to his family by the police. He's been living in this space for a very, very long time. And so I want you to go into it with that in mind. And Herbie and I, and maybe you via text or phone calls, will have a discussion about it after it's all done. But I wanted to let you hear this first part, because I think that the first part really encapsulates a lot of feelings. And this, I'm telling you right now, this is going to be hard for you. And I would appreciate it that if you live in that space where it might be hard for you. I'm only asking you to do it for 25 minutes. He's been doing it for 56 years. This is Kenny Williams talking about what it's like to be black in America.
I was asked a question not long ago by a very close white friend of mine, older man who asked what it was like to be black. And my answer was, it's exhausting. And at times it has been more exhausting than others, because at times you want to give up and you don't see hope. You don't see a vision for a better future. I tried it. People have commented on the looting, the violence that has happened as a result of all of this. And I do not excuse it for anyone, because I don't agree with it. I think it's wrong. But I don't know what the expectation is when you take hope from people, when they don't have a vision for a better life. Forget better life, a better tomorrow. And I'm not saying tomorrow in the tomorrow sense, I'm saying tomorrow, where you're going to get your next meal from, where you're going to get your next from. So I wasn't surprised when some of these things started happening. The same person who asked that question about what it's like to be black, that same person I said to years ago, when Colin Kaepernick took a peaceful knee, not protesting our military as it was portrayed, but just some of the things that you're seeing now, police injustice and brutality. And I said, listen, whether you agree or not, be careful, because no group in the history of man has ever been oppressed to the degree they felt like, or discriminated against, whatever, to the degree they felt like they had to take the initiative to protest in the first place, and to get out there and make their cases heard. No group like that has ever reacted well to being told when, where, and how to protest. You do that, it's a recipe for disaster. So this hasn't surprised me. What has surprised me is that, and I gotta say thank you to all the people of all different backgrounds I've seen out in the streets saying Black Lives Matter. The comedian Michael Che has something out right now. He may have done it a while ago, but he really illustrates kind of how ridiculous it is to have to say Black Lives Matter. Like, not matter more than anyone else's, just matter, and how low that bar is. But to see, I had given up hope. I'm telling you, I had given up hope that in my lifetime I would see substantial gains in this area. Black people alone cannot erase racism. No more than black people could have solved slavery on our own. We need white people to do that. And it appears to me, maybe I'm overly optimistic, but it appears to me that people have seen enough. I just hope it also leads to some of these marches heading down to the voter registration booth and people showing up to vote. I hope some of these marches leads to people being just as angry about crime within the community, not police crime, but black on black crime. I don't know what the numbers were the night of the first riot, but there were 18 to 20 some odd people that also lost their lives. that night. And we should be just as outraged about them as we were or are about Mr. Floyd.
When you saw it, what'd you feel when you first saw
it? Get off the man's neck. And not only that, he had his hand, if you look closely, he had his hand in his pocket in a casual kind of way as he applied the pressure. We watched a murder right in front of our eyes. We've seen it before. I don't know that we've seen it that casual before, that with total disregard to humanity before. When I hear I can't breathe, I don't just hear it and see him lying there, though. I have felt that, and others that I've had this conversation with, other black men and women I've had this conversation with, it's been difficult to breathe for a long time. When I was asked that question, what's it like being black? And I said, it's exhausting. I recognize I'm now in a position of good fortune, a certain amount of wealth, a certain amount of comfort. If it's this exhausting for me, what's it like for people who are struggling day to day? I've had those conversations with people. I've had these conversations with kids who, when I ask, and I got chills right now thinking about it, but when I ask them, when do you start to worry about your safety? And they say, Mr. Williams, it used to be when I opened the door and got to my porch to go to school. Now I got to make sure that while I'm in the house, I'm not in the direct angle of a window. So what are we, our kids have got to worry about this? I'm 56 years old. I still have to worry about what I'm wearing when I get up in the morning, depending on where I'm going. I still have to get on an elevator. And if I don't have my executive clothes and my suit and tie, I still got to see a woman who sees me and backs off the elevator in 2020. I still have to have the same conversations today that my father had with me, that his father had to have with him. His father had to explain to him, be careful about looking a white man in his eye, because they don't like that. And you could find yourself in a lot of trouble. Well, my father was the rebellious one and had some issues as a result of that. He passed that down to his kid. But when he passed it down to his son, and the words of wisdom that he gave to me along the way about you fight for what's right and you become the man that you know is inside of you along the way to protect your family and prepare them. So when I was named general manager in October of 2000, and I go home, and on the side of my house is spray painted, "No should run the Chicago White Sox," capital W-H-I-T-E. It hurt. And I called my father. And he's not here anymore. But he gave me, he told me, go get your son. So I went inside and got my sons,